going on, everybody? Alan Kenny, managing editor, crystalballrun.com, the Blogging Network's college football blog. And joining me today is one of our favorite guests. He is probably, I'd say, is it fair to say the world's leading NCAA authority, John? Do you consider yourself the world's leading NCAA authority?
Of people who don't work at the NCAA or for a college at this point, maybe, yeah. There's not too many other people doing it, so it might be first in a field of one.
That's John Infante, folks, who I've had him on quite a few times. But he is with athleticscholarships.net. He's also the brains behind the Bylaw blog, which has been a vital resource for fans trying to kind of figure out what's going on with the NCAA and looking at some of the potential policy landmines that are out there. And, John, are you familiar with Bob Stoops?
I've heard of him.
Stoops earlier this week in an interview with Matt Hayes talked about why he it's interesting. I don't think he actually ever said necessarily that he is against stipends for players, but he made a pretty vociferous argument that essentially players get a pretty good deal with the scholarships that they receive, and that you know, the, I believe the Matt Hayes termed it as, you know, shut up and play. Again, I don't think Stoops said that, but there's a quote in there specifically that said, you know, you something along the lines of, you think you're the only person that's ever had a hungry Sunday. And so obviously this got a lot of people riled up, and I wanted to bring John on to kind of talk about the whole idea of full cost of scholarships, stipends, pay for play, all that. So anyway, John, I think it's important to always kind of maybe get a foundation as to where things really stand with all this, and you know, how this issue's kind of been percolating lately. So, you know, can you give us maybe just a short summary of how this is, you know, kind of grown and developed in the last couple years?
Well, so way back when, during the presidential retreat back in August 2011, one of the landmark pieces of legislation that came out of that was pushed by the Division I Board of Directors and Mark Emmert was this idea of giving full scholarship student-athletes an additional $2,000 a year or up to the cost of attendance, whichever was less. Right now, scholarships are limited to tuition, required fees, books, room, and board. So there's all these additional costs that are included in the school's cost of attendance calculations that they submit to the federal government for financial aid purposes that aren't covered by the scholarships, or specifically the athletic scholarships. Now, there are ways for athletes to get those costs covered, but their athletic scholarships are not one of them. So that was sort of pushed through with the board of directors, and then it was slapped back down by the membership. There was well over the required number of override requests to have that reconsidered, so many that the board of directors decided to table the whole proposal and go back to the drawing board. They then came back with a series of need-based ideas where athletes would get up to $2,000 minus their additional aid, and in some cases minus something called their expected family contribution, which when you file for financial aid, the federal government figures out essentially what your family can afford. That was also rejected, in some cases still being too expensive, but also because depending on the calculation you used, the full scholarship football and men's basketball players that were sort of driving this discussion wouldn't have gotten any additional money because their costs would have either been covered by a Pell Grant or their family contribution. So now the we're right back to the drawing board again with the same working group working on yet another round of ideas. And at the same time, the rules working group is considering doing away with this whole idea of stipends and just and, you know, anything about $2,000 limits or need, and just saying that we're going to eliminate this full grant and aid limit and all scholarships can go up to the full cost of attendance.
So just so I have this clear, the kind of original proposal out there was $2,000. Does that sound about right?
Yeah, it was an additional $2,000, unless that puts you over the cost of attendance, which there's a very few number of schools that have a gap that small. The average is, I think, somewhere in the neighborhood of about $3,500. of, you know, again, expenses that aren't covered by the scholarship. And it ranges a lot from under $1,000 to, I think one school, their gap is listed as something like $10,000. So they were going to limit it to 2,000 just to make sure the schools couldn't monkey with their number at all, and sort of fudge it in order to, you know, get more cash into their kids' pockets.
Okay. So, you know, Bob Stoops came out. This is an important issue for a lot, especially among the bigger schools. It's getting floated a lot. I mean, I know that Jim Delaney of the Big Ten, for example, has come out in favor of doing something like this, or at least exploring it. And, you know, Stoops, you know, argued, you know, pretty strongly that he thinks that the value in general of a scholarship is already pretty good. I mean, you know, do you think that he made I guess in terms of the ideas that he presented, did you find his arguments compelling?
I think he has a good argument for what we should say is the value of what athletes get right now. He's including a lot of components, whether it's the value of the education, the additional earnings that education gets you, the fact that for a lot of these kids, you know, but for their being an athlete, they might not have the opportunity for this type of education. But again, between people who are kind of dead set against or dead set on more money for athletes, be it stipends or outside income or, you know, straight salaries or pay for play, and the way he did that message, I don't think he really got across the point he was trying to get across, which was, you know, as we talk about what athletes should get on top of what they already receive, we should, you know, take a moment to consider the full value of what they're getting out of their experience, you know, both the good and the bad, before we ask, you know, all right, do they need to get even more on top of that?
I guess fundamentally, do you agree or disagree with him?
If what he's saying is that the value of what athletes get right now is plenty, I think that's tough to defend. I can't agree with him there, because, I mean, part of what the NCAA should be doing is always increasing, you know, the support for athletes, whether that's upping the value of the scholarship, you know, expanding scholarship limits so more athletes can get their education paid for, promoting, you know, more teams, sponsoring programs to increase participation in financial aid. So you always want there to be more. And I think, you know, we never want to sit there and say, all right, athletes have enough. They don't need to get anything more now. So, it is, you know, looking at his idea of how he values it and, you know, his argument that this stuff has value and we shouldn't ignore it when talking about what athletes receive, like, there I agree with him. But when it goes into, and this is enough for eternity, let's drop this issue, which is kind of how it comes off, then it's hard to stick with him there.
So do you think in particular, I think that one thing that kind of at least caught a lot of people who certainly disagree with him on this was his idea about the quality of the education actually available to athletes. I mean, do you think that he's being disingenuous about that?
I don't know about disingenuous, you know, because I don't know if he, you know, again, he's in an interview. We don't know, like, what he considered when he sort of decided to say what he said. But it's definitely a point he fails to address, which is, you know, that yes, these kids are getting an opportunity to go to Oklahoma, but are they getting the same, you know, experience at Oklahoma that a regular student is getting, or are they, you know, in a major that's not as valuable or not as desirable to employers? Are they being pushed through? You know, are they being discouraged from, you know, challenging themselves academically? And on the flip side, you know, I think there's even something that he failed to address in support of his argument, which, you know, as he talked about his experience with Hayden Fry and sort of the lessons that taught him that made him into the coach he is today, the NCAA has actually loosened a few rules recently that make it easier for student athletes to have that experience. So there's more student, you know, undergraduate assistant coaches. The NCAA just expanded the number of graduate assistant coaches. So, you know, it seems kind of like a kind of half-baked statement, because there's not only things that he needs to address if he's going to say that this is such a great educational opportunity that athletes don't deserve anything, you know, beyond it, and also the arguments that would have helped his point about, you know, this is a valuable experience that they can use to jumpstart a career.
no, I'm gonna say that again. So I know that you wrote about this for athleticscholarships.net, talking about kind of the message versus how it's presented versus what the message is. I mean, if you're the NCAA, you hear Stoops saying this, what's your reaction?
My reaction, if I'm in, the PR department is, you can't go saying that athletes should just suck it up and go hungry. There's, especially if you're in the NCAA and you're really working on this problem. I mean, specifically this idea that on, a Sunday night, the athlete has, nowhere to go. He's out of meal points or there's no training table or he's out of cash and he's just got to sit there that night and be hungry. The NCAA is looking at unlimited food. They're looking at stipends. They're looking at increasing the scholarships. There's, all the sorts of different occasional meal type things and little benefits that you can give to an athlete to help them out. And I think going back to the point that, you'd always hope that, you always want more for the athletes, that, their situation should always be improving rather than sort of, it almost sounded like a hazing thing where, mm-hmm. Back in my day, we went through this, so you guys should have to go through it too. And, if I'm the NCAA, I look at that and say, that's really going to add fuel to the fire of the people who say, that coaches in the NCAA and administrators don't get it. And therefore, let's scrap their idea about stipends or bigger scholarships and just move this to a professional model. So athletes have so much money that they never have to worry about going hungry rather than trying to, fix this system instead of just throwing it out.
Yeah, and the interesting thing to me about that, though, is you mentioned the people who tend to get exercised about this. And, I consider myself one of them, and a lot of other people who are more kind of maybe nationally known media figures, but it's amazing to me because to a person, I think in terms of just your average everyday fan or whatnot, I think public opinion falls squarely on the side of not giving athletes some type of stipend or a pay for play.
I'd say this. I think, first of all, I disagree with the idea that a stipend or full cost of attendance scholarship is the equivalent of pay for play, or this idea that, the sort of accusation that's been leveled at Mark Emmer, which is if you're in support of the stipend, you support paying athletes. So why don't you support paying them, a salary or something?
Yeah, that's a very good point. Yeah.
Yeah. And so the stipend or the full cost of attendance scholarship is well within the NCAA's definition of amateurism. They're saying, the school says you're incurring these costs to be an athlete, so you're not profiting if we pay these expenses for you or give you, reimburse you for these expenses. I think if you asked public opinion and you just asked them the simple question of should, Division I football players get an even bigger scholarship, I think, like you said, public opinion is going to be on the side of, is going to sound a lot like what Stoops said, that they get a lot already. I had to pay for college. Why do these kids get even more? These kids get this opportunity and a lot of them don't take advantage of it. Why should we, continue to sort of make them feel entitled to, receiving more and more and more? But I think if you then frame the question as, athletes have costs that aren't covered by their scholarship, that it's not full in the sense of covering all their costs. Should the scholarship cover all their costs? I think you'd see a very different opinion, and that people, when they learn that the full ride is not completely full, that they would, I think, in general, support that going up to the full cost of attendance.
What we probably can agree on is that I think that public sentiment would say athletes are getting a really good deal. And right now, obviously, there's a big other kind of ball looming out there on this, and that is the Ed O'Bannon case, which is, it looks like it might be going to finally be, there'd be some movement on it in 2014. And that has to do with the licensing of players' likenesses, but they've also expanded that to include TV money, television revenue. You mentioned in your piece right now that given that you've got the Ed O'Bannon case out there, you've got, this movement, at least with some schools, to provide full cost of attendance. At some point, you got to think that there's enough pressure on the system that we're going to be getting around to actually incorporate some additional payment being made, right?
Yeah, I think that it's kind of reached a tipping point where something has to give in the next, you know, year or so before, especially if the Ed O'Bannon case is about to head to trial, where either this issue is defeated, and I would think that that's, you know, going to be one of those triggers where the large schools might seriously look at leaving the NCAA or crafting a new division within the NCAA in order to get this stipend passed or full cost of attendance scholarships passed, or everybody kind of sees the writing on the wall and says, you know, as much as we object to this, we kind of have to do it. And there was, you know, lots of different ways they could have done it had they sort of thought about this earlier. And, you know, if the NCAA playoff, if the, you know, new football playoff had been an actual NCAA tournament and a portion of that revenue passed through the NCAA, then, you know, based on the kind of revenue projections and certainly what the NCAA could have commanded on top of that with their brand name when it comes to tournaments, we might have seen just a situation where the NCAA had enough money to simply subsidize the additional cost for all the schools. But now that's out the window. And as the O'Bannon case advances to trial, the odds of using full cost of attendance scholarships as a settlement chip is going to be diminished, as the plaintiffs in that case, who don't look like they want to settle right now, they look like they feel like they sort of have the NCAA, you know, back against the wall and they want to press their advantage. But each time they win a victory, whether it's keeping the case from being dismissed, amending their complaint to include the TV money, or the one that's coming up in a couple months to have the class certified for the class action, mm-hmm. They're going to want more out of their settlement. And I think, you know, if that class gets certified, I don't know if you're going to be able to escape with full cost of attendance scholarships in a fund for former athletes like you might have, you know, a couple months or a year ago in that case.
Mm-hmm. One thing that you and I've kind of talked about on Twitter and whatnot back and forth, the idea, though, that if there is a favorable judgment for athletes in that Ed O'Bannon case, the idea that maybe, you know, you'd see some type of unionizing or, you know, some type of labor group being formed around college athletes. You know, I guess in general, do you have any thoughts there? I mean, do you think that that is something that's actually viable?
Well, you know, in terms of whether or not the NCAA would be open to it, I think, you know, most people have assumed, given the NCAA's track record of, you know, the creation of the term student athlete and its history and avoiding workman's comp and the pretty staunch insistence of the NCAA that athletes are not employees, that they would never do something like this. They would never agree to a union. But if they lose the O'Bannon case, that changes things drastically, and they're now in a much different position than they were, you know, when in the discussion was athletes are, you know, student athletes versus employees, because now it would be student athletes meaning something different that couldn't include being on the hook for all sorts of additional revenue beyond what's in the judgment that they might have to give athletes if they continue to win court cases. So it might simply be easier for the NCAA to, and cheaper, you know, if they go run the numbers, to sit down, suck up the additional cost of athletes being employees, which is things like, you know, workman's comp, unemployment insurance, payroll taxes, things like that, and sort of do everything in one grand bargain and do everything through a collective bargaining agreement, which might even be something that the NCAA tries to make more favorable to them than the judgment. And that would be through, and I think my idea would be that they would simply, you know, shut down or lock out the players and hope that they can, you know, sort of break the union that they're creating before the players are able to, you know, win another court case to get them to start athletic programs again.
What do you think, I mean, what would be the impetus, though, for starting this kind of union? I mean, would it be a nonprofit organization that advocates for athletes now, or how, I mean, what would it look like?
I think it looked like a labor union. I mean, the groups like, for instance, the NCPA, the National College Players Association, have worked closely with labor unions. I think they specifically have a relationship with United Auto Workers. Other groups like AFL-CIO and other big labor unions or labor organizations have expressed a willingness to get involved with student athletes. You have the problem that they're not considered employees and they don't have a right under the law right now to unionize, but that could change because a group of grad students has challenged the ruling that graduate assistants or research assistants or teaching assistants are not employees that have a right to unionize. And if you read through some of the materials in that challenge and sort of replace grad assistant with student athlete, it still makes a lot of sense, the arguments they're making. So if they were to win that, you could then logically extend that to athletes. And, you know, what the form of that union takes is unclear. It might just be, you know, one union per sport. It might be by conference. It might be, you know, one union for all student athletes that negotiates with the NCAA. But again, if the NCAA loses the O'Bannon case, you might get more certainty out of going through that process of unionization and collective bargaining than you will of the potential for more litigation and more court cases that have you paying out even more revenue to student athletes than just television, moving into things like ticket sales and merchandising and even, you know, the donations people are making to the athletic department.
Yeah, I mean, that O'Bannon case could open just a Pandora's box. But, you know, the one thing that when the idea of unionizing does come up, though, that always strikes me, though, is that, I mean, to me, you know, forming a labor union is such a long-term play. And the only, you know, the true people with leverage on the athlete side, I mean, these are, like, in my opinion, really comes down to kind of your star athletes, you know, your Robert Griffin III and Andrew Luck and guys like that. And to me, I mean, they have such a short window, really, that they're really arguing about in terms of time. That I mean, like, I'm not sure if they have that time to you know, go through a lockout or a strike or anything like that.
Well, yeah, and I think that's prevented student athletes from forming the union. But if we, you know, take the kind of scenario that I've, you know, laid out on Twitter here, where the NCAA has lost the O'Bannon case and it's now trying to find a way out from under the verdict, they would be able to use exactly what you said as against the athletes to force them into a union and a collective bargaining agreement that is not as favorable as the O'Bannon verdict. So they might say, we're locking you out, we're not going to play, but if you want to play, you'll form a union, you'll certify the union, you know, agree to join it and agree to this deal, which is better than what we were giving you, but not as good as what was in the O'Bannon case. And that might be, you know, full cost of attendance scholarships and, you know, some looser restrictions on earning outside income or, you know, some safety restriction or some, you know, new safety measures in football about hitting during practice and things like that. And, you know, the NCAA would be banking on exactly what you said, that athletes want to get back out on the field. They, especially the stars, have short professional careers and even a shorter time to prove themselves to professional leagues. So, heck, if they're going to end up with a better deal than what the NCAA was offering them, you could see them, you know, be the ones to push for accepting a worse deal than they won in the courts just to get back out on the field.
Man, that's ironic, because it seems like right now the idea of unionizing is so, you know, anathema to the NCAA that in this scenario they'd actually push for athletes to unionize.
Well, yeah, because they would have essentially, you know, run out of options. Because if they lose the O'Bannon case and they lose it big, which means, you know, losing their antitrust exemption, there's only two ways to get that back, which is to get an act of Congress passed to give them a statutory antitrust exemption, which means probably submitting, you know, negotiating with Congress in some way about greater due process protection or potentially more scrutiny over their tax exempt status. Or it means negotiating with the athletes. So they're going to have to cut a deal that right now seems unthinkable to them one way or the other. But I think it just goes to show that just how much of a game changer a really big victory by the plaintiffs in the O'Bannon case could be, that it goes so far as to say that unionization is now to the advantage of the NCAA rather than to the advantage of the athletes. And again, there are a long time before we get to that point. You know, we're talking about something that would happen in, you know, probably the latter half of the decade rather than in the next year or so, and potentially even longer. And I think the case is a coin flip. I think the NCAA, you know, the NCAA has court precedent, even if it's not great court precedent on their side, and they make arguments in their, you know, motion for the class certification or against the class certification that might not be compelling to some people, but at very least deserve consideration. So we're a long way off from the NCAA becoming the pro-union side of this argument, but I think it's certainly a possibility as a last-ditch effort if they're out of other cards to play.
Yeah, and I'll let you go. Really quickly though, I want to ask. Let's say that the athletes lose that case. I mean, is that essentially kind of codifying the system of college athletics right now as we know it for the foreseeable future?
Well, it would close off the idea of using litigation as a tool because I've sort of, you know, been confused by the O'Bannon plaintiffs kind of all in bed on this, that, you know, they are attacking the heart of, you know, the growth of college athletics, television revenue, as opposed to, you know, what you think might be a more conservative strategy of go win on the video game money for former athletes and then go win on the TV, right, the rebroadcast rights for former athletes. And only then do you start talking about current athletes and amateurism rules, you know, which really kind of wakes the bear of the NCAA up when you start to poke at it. If they suffer a big defeat, if, you know, the courts reaffirm the NCAA's antitrust exemption and in addition, you know, the NCAA's rules as being, you know, legal under antitrust law, then really their only option is to go to Congress and get Congress to regulate the NCAA more closely and require NCAA schools to provide more to athletes. But then essentially, you know, they're out of other cards to play because they can't really go through state law too much, although it looks like there's a law pending in California that could challenge the NCAA on that point. But state legislatures would mostly be a non-starter, and the courts would essentially be closed to them until or unless Congress changed the law.
Yeah, good luck with that. John, appreciate it, man. Always so informative having you on, man, and I really appreciate you taking time out to come on and talk about the stipend issue with me.
Glad to do it anytime.
All right. Thank you all, too, for joining us, folks. For CrystalBallRun.com, I'm Alan Kenny.